Thank you for downloading the Kol Hadash podcast. This is episode 45 and the first in our series of High Holidays episodes for the Jewish year 5773. This year, Adam Shalom explores the Torah, our Torah, and in this episode, the relevancy of the myths in the Torah.
One Sunday, a Sunday school student comes home and his parents, as usual, ask him, "What did you learn at Sunday school this morning?" And he tells his parents what his teacher told him, that during the Exodus, the Israeli army built pontoon bridges to bring the Hebrews from Egypt to the Promised Land. His parents respond, "You didn't believe that, did you?" And he answered, "You should have heard what they tried to tell us." Is anything just a myth? Sometimes myths die harder than facts. The first modern geologists thought that the world might be 20,000 years old. Religion at the time knew the world was only 5,000 years old, and clergy harshly condemned this geological heresy. Now, the fact that the world was 20,000 years old died a long time ago. Today, we believe the earth is millions of years old. But the myth of 5,000 years continues. In 2010, the Gallup organization asked if you agreed that God created man pretty much in his present form at one time within the last 10,000 years. 40% of Americans agreed. The progress of human knowledge may take small steps, but then it makes a great leap, what's called a paradigm shift, from one system to another. The Earth as the center of the solar system, with stars revolving around it, to a model where the sun is the center, from solid mass to atomic theory, from Genesis creation to evolution. Our response to myth is not an incremental stepladder to the truth. It is a paradigm shift, a whole new view of the world, an exodus of our own. Paradigm shifts can be scary, because we are not always sure what lies on the other side. Recall the Exodus story. The Jewish people leave slavery, but it is the only life they have known for generations. They head out into the wilderness with only matzah packed on their backs. They face the Red Sea, and Pharaoh's armies chase after them to bring them back to Egyptian slavery. The way to the Promised Land is open, but there are walls of water on either side. Do we dare to cross over? Do we dare to stay, knowing that freedom is that way? Let us take our exodus to history. At the same time, let us never say that our people's earliest stories, the template for Jewish literature and culture, are only myths. And let us also affirm that they are myth and not fact. What is our Torah? What for us is the most important wisdom? It is not only the Torah scroll, the five books of Moses, which Moses, if he even existed, probably didn't write. When we do read that Torah, we explore who did write it, and when, and why. We explore what ideas and values it represents. We discover what we agree with and what we reject. In Jewish civilization, the word Torah, the concept Torah, has always been broader than those five books. It's from the same root as morah, teacher. So when we choose what will be our Torah, and we decide if the traditional Torah will make it into our humanistic arc, we need to deal with a very serious issue. Is the Torah true? But before we answer that question, we need to face two other not-so-innocent questions. If you ask a somewhat traditional person, or even someone who does not live very traditionally but does not directly challenge tradition, if you ask them, is it true? Is the Torah scroll true? They may answer your question with another question. What is true anyways? You say potato, I say potato. You say evolution, I say creation. Who's to decide what the truth is? The irony here is that for a long, long time, literal truth was very, very important. Your fathers witnessed this. Your grandparents created this covenant. This is what the God of Israel truly and really and truly did. Why love the stranger? Because you were strangers in the land of Egypt. Why observe the Sabbath? Because in 6 days God created the earth, and on the seventh he rested. We all knew what truth was until truth stopped agreeing with what we were told to believe. And then we had a problem. Some chose truth, some chose belief, and others tried to deny that there was any contradiction at all. You see, truth is not a personal preference like choosing a color for your kitchen or even voting, which is hopefully a reason-based activity focused on evidence and careful consideration. Maybe that's my myth. So you cross that hurdle. You explain that truth means happened or did not happen, the sea parted or it did not, there was a global flood with Noah's Ark or there was not. And then you hear the second not-so-innocent question. Who cares if it's true? I just want to enjoy the stories. I want to appreciate how my ancestors interpreted them from their perspective. So enough questions already. I was in a class at Yale University, and I raised these historical questions, and the teacher said, well, we're studying the text as received. Not as it came to be, but as we have it now. The way our ancestors read it, the way the early rabbis read it, that's how we're reading it today. Now, these high holidays, we will be exploring the Torah through the lenses of history and ethics and literature and roots. And there are many ways to view a text, but is it true or is it not true is also an important question to ask. I care if it's true. Wouldn't you live your life differently if you thought it was true? If you believed a creator God of the universe wrote a book with all the rules for life, that would change your life. And our ancestors did believe it. Traditional Jewish learning didn't ask our questions about creation or Noah or the Exodus. They believed they were true, period. For them, a God formed the first human from the dust of the ground and breathed life into him. Not a metaphor, a fact. Our ancestors believed in factual truth, and they cared that it was true. We agree. We believe in factual truth, and we care if it's true or not. The world was not created in 6 days. Humanity is not a divine ceramics project. There was no global flood with Noah. Maybe a few slaves escaped some kind of Egyptian slavery, but nothing like the Exodus story or a national revelation on Mount Sinai. Tomorrow we'll explore more about real Jewish history. We'll find out why we believe what we do. And if tomorrow isn't enough, we have 20 Tuesday evening classes on Jewish history throughout this congregational year. Now, as an undergraduate again, I once got into an email exchange on a Jewish discussion list. It turned out to be all very traditional Jews except for me. And the conversation turned to how they were so sure that Moses wrote the Torah, the whole Torah, and nothing but the Torah, given all of the archaeology, all of the other evidence suggesting something else. And their answer was, 600,000 people witnessed it. I said, how do you know 600,000 people witnessed it? Their answer, it says so in the Torah. Now, if you assume a priori that it's true, then you can prove it from itself. But we who like external confirmation for our truth have to look somewhere else. The truth is that the truth is good for you. Good parents need to know how to tell the difference between a story and the facts. And so do thinking members of the Jewish family. If we take seriously the difference between truth and myth, between fact and story in Judaism, then we can do the same for ourselves. You see, it's very easy to rationalize a self-serving decision. It's very convenient to remember events the way that makes us look the best and makes our antagonists look the worst. It's very tempting to listen only to the facts and details and opinions that confirm our own perspective. I often wonder how many people besides me read both the Huffington Post and FoxNews.com. The exodus from myth to truth is difficult because we have to look back with clarity, but we can also look around and at ourselves with these new eyes. And the stories themselves acquire a new value. You see, there is a poetic truth to many of these narratives. They speak to truths of the human experience. They ring true with human emotions. In the story of Noah, when God looks down and sees the world corrupted, His impulse is the same as ours when we find a mistake when we're writing. We get frustrated, we crumple it up, we start over. This is myth as an expression of the human condition. God's made in our image. All well and good. But when we do pursue that simple question, did it happen or not, that is the beginning of this exodus to history. Now, what does all of this myth rejection mean? No more unicorn song about Noah and the ark in Sunday school? Joseph and his Technicolor dream coat, go, 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 gone? Popping the Santa Claus bubble times 10,000? Well, you can go too far in the Mythbuster direction. Did George Washington chop down a cherry tree and then tell the truth? We will never find the stump. We know Greek myths for the origin of seasons or the discovery of fire, Prometheus bringing light and knowledge to humanity in the face of divine wrath. We are not afraid that our children will start sacrificing animals to Zeus if they know these myths. Albert Camus vividly demonstrated existentialist philosophy, struggling against a meaningless universe, through the story of Sisyphus, a Greek king punished for eternity by being forced to push a boulder up a mountain, only to have it fall down and be forced to carry it up all over again. We in our lives, we struggle to live, to be happy, to create, to breathe free. Our task seems never ending. Yet there is inspiration to be found in taking up the boulder again, using our positive mental attitude to provide meaning in a universe that just doesn't care. You see, there is no real Sisyphus, and we are all Sisyphus. To bring it back to the Jewish myth, there was no Exodus, and there have been hundreds of exodi. The African-American exodus from slavery, the Jewish exodus from Tsarist oppression to American freedom, the personal exodus from rigid doctrine to freedom of thought and free exercise of our Judaism. You see, the Torah is full of origin myths. Why we think we are naked, why we hate snakes, why there are rainbows, why there is death, why we know good from evil. Origin myths describe realities that already exist. There are rainbows. There is a Jewish people who eats unleavened bread in the spring. We have a different truth today as to how those realities came to be, what they mean. What inspires us in our myths is that we still grapple with those same realities. It is not good for humanity to be alone. We should love our neighbors as ourselves. I am my brother's and my sister's keeper. The exodus from slavery to freedom is an aliyah, an ascent, an improvement in the human condition. Our Torah, our Ark, must include these myths, not because they teach us the truth about the world, but because they illustrate truths about us. The Torah as a whole is an origin myth for the Jewish people, the world in which they live and the people surrounding them, their laws and their customs, their identity and their very existence. This Torah origin myth gives us roots in the two major cradles of civilization, Abraham in Ur, the first city, and Moses in Egypt. The Exodus story explains why this people eats unleavened bread and lambs in the spring, beyond the seasonal transition that is the more likely historical reason. The Torah claims the Jewish people began as a family, the concern of Abraham and sons. The Torah is sometimes called the tree of life, but the true tree of life in the Torah is this mythical family tree. And how many of our family trees have myths in them anyways? Was everyone really descended from a rabbi? Was no one descended from a Jewish criminal? If we succeed in our exodus from myth to history, we can look back with perspective and clarity. We need not become a pillar of salt like Lot's wife. Myths say something about us. What does this origin myth say for the Jewish people? We see that being Jewish is a family and not a belief. Sherwin Wine once pointed out that all Lutherans don't claim to be descended from Martin Luther. But we claim this descent. Being Jewish is a family. We see from this myth that we want to be chosen. We want to be special. We want promises made and promises kept because of our ancestors and because of our commitments. We want there to be a reason for suffering, even if we blamed ourselves to complete the circle. We want to hope that we can influence who will live and who will die, who by fire and who by water, in the words of the traditional medieval Yom Kippur prayer. Accepting these realities of the human experience and of the Jewish family is the first step to answering them, even with our own answers. Modern Jewish life still has its myths. We are told that what unites Jews is God, Torah, Israel. In my experience, nothing divides Jews like God, Torah, Israel. What they mean, who is in and who is out. Each generation of Jews is convinced that they will be the last, that Judaism will vanish. We've been called the ever-dying people. But they can't be right if we are here. Now, I can hear the scientifically inclined in the audience muttering, enough about myth. What's the truth? Who are our real fathers and mothers? What are the real origins of the Jewish family? Well, for that answer, you need to come back tomorrow morning. But I want you to consider a third not-so-innocent question. If we accept that there is truth, and we know that the truth does matter, what changes with these new truths? What can we do, and what do we no longer do or say? We know the mythic power of the Exodus narrative. It is relived from generation to generation, and not just on Passover. We all have left what we knew for something new. How we celebrate our Jewishness, the home city in which we live, even our house. We leave one nuclear family to create our own. Consider finally the rabbinic myth of the Exodus of Nachshon. After all, rabbinic literature and Jewish folklore create their own myths beyond the Torah. Nachshon is listed in the Torah's genealogy as a brother of Aaron. In rabbinic legend, the Israelites are waiting for the Red Sea to part. And Nachshon, by himself, walks in up to his nose until the sea opens. To be a Nachshon is to walk forward with courage, to lead others on the road to freedom. We have had our Nachshons, our founders who parted the waters, who separated myth on one side and fact on the other and passed between them to the truth. Rabbi Daniel Friedman, our Rabbi Emeritus, this year marked 50 years in the rabbinate, over four decades promoting and exemplifying humanistic Judaism. I can only do what I do for you because he did what he did for so many. Now, I did not personally experience an exodus from myth to history. My parents did that. My rabbis did that. My personal and my philosophical ancestors. They took that journey for me. Like Rabbi Friedman and Rabbi Wein, my father was raised very traditionally and grew out of it. His first exodus was the exodus from Brooklyn. But the exodus from myth followed soon after. I was raised on the other shore, with awareness of the myths, but not believing them to be real. Those raised free need to appreciate what has been left behind. Those who free themselves can learn from those who live that free lifestyle without baggage and history. I want to conclude with a passage that we read at many of our bar and bat mitzvahs, a lyrical passage by the Jewish historian Howard Sacker. There are those who now look back in complacency and indifference, who accept the fruits of the long journey, but ignore the bitter costs of liberation and its lessons in tenacity and endurance. They are the strangers, and the road passes them by. There are others who look back in gratitude and humility, who remember that few present blessings have been won without the sacrifices of the past, and here's the key. Who continually reevaluate the spiritual and cultural treasures that the travail of the journey has produced. These are the true heirs of the generations, and for them, the long and agonizing journey has been worthwhile. Shana Tova.
This podcast was recorded and produced by Ken Burke on behalf of Rabbi Shalom and Kol Hadash in conjunction with Repatriation Studios.
I'm Ken Burke, and thank you for listening.